The three pieces in the trilogy are collectively called Living Openly and Notoriously. The plays explore her upbringing in the Mennonite faith and her struggle to understand and reconcile that upbringing as an adult. Elizabeth Hess joins me in the studio. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. I'm pleased to be here.
Great to meet you. So you grew up as the daughter of a Mennonite minister.
I did.
And from that experience, it seems that these plays emerged. What was growing up in that situation like?
Well, we grew up in Toronto, and at that time, it was considered a mission church, which is kind of funny because Toronto's nickname is Toronto the Good. But we had this little congregation that my father nurtured, and there were a lot of people in that blue-collar neighborhood and welfare who he administered to. And so I was raised outside of the community, but was still raised as a Mennonite. I was really a missionary's daughter.
Okay, so outside of the community, meaning you did not live in a Mennonite community that was purposely sequestered.
Right. So we would go to conferences, all the family reunions were back into the bosom of the Mennonite community. And I went to a private Mennonite high school. So I was very much a Mennonite girl, but very exposed to the big city at the same time.
Now, a lot of folks, myself included, often confuse Mennonites and the Amish. Mm-hmm. Give us a quick Reader's Digest history of the two religions.
The Mennonites broke away, Menno Simons broke away from the Catholic Church in the 1600s. And then Jacob Aumann, the Amish, broke away from the Mennonites when the Mennonites became too liberal. So the Amish are actually a later group than the Mennonites, even though they're more conservative.
Okay, so what was it about your upbringing? Because these plays, you know, you talk a lot about, you know, a sort of a reaction to this upbringing. What was it about your upbringing as a Mennonite in that situation in Toronto that led you to write these pieces?
Mennonites are all about service, giving yourself to others. And I was taught as a little girl that I had no needs. Therefore, anything that came up that was full of feeling was a big problem. And I didn't know as a child that I was an artist and that I was sensitive and that I was soulful. I just knew that my imagination and my response to things were not appropriate.
So being told that you had no needs, that's because as a matter of faith, Mennonites live to serve others.
That's right.
Instead of themselves. Well, so what could be wrong with that, though? I mean, that's a lovely thing.
Well, that's so true. On some levels, it's wonderful. There's a kind of generous impulse. But what I feel from having grown up in that environment is that unless you own yourself and own your own feelings, you're really not meeting someone in a place of wholeness. You're asking them to take care of your emotional life for you. And that was very much my experience, particularly with my father and with the men in the church, that they really require others to have their feelings in place of them having the feelings themselves.
Okay, so how is this experience manifested then in these three pieces that you've written? And I take it that a couple of them you've not performed before?
I've performed all of them, but I have never performed all three of them together.
How are these experiences that you had as a kid manifested in the plays?
The little girl in the first play says, I want to be fully expressed. And she's not quite sure what that means. And there's so little opportunity to allow for an artistic release. And I discovered that music was this one place where there was no censorship. So I would sing my heart out in church. And then I asked to play the violin. And I used to play the church organ. And this was so enlivening for me. And so I trace through that first play how music becomes the thread of moving out of that suppression to a sense of aliveness and expression that of inner contents, her heart.
And so give me an example of things that were not allowed then by your father or your parents, things that you wanted to do, had an impulse to do as a child but couldn't do. Obviously, you could sing and you could play. That was okay.
My father would tell me that crying was manipulative. there is no expression of dark feelings in the family. I've never once heard my parents raise their voice. There's no such thing as anger. And I think there's a misconception about the gentle people, Mennonites being the gentle people. And with that gentleness comes a lot of containment of the range of human responses. And I think that's one of the reasons I'm an actor, is that that has been so freeing for me to take some of those darker qualities that you have and find a way to transform them in your art. So I'm speaking specifically about emotionally there being lid on things. But also, we were not particularly encouraged to participate in sports. I remember going to a birthday party once when I was six, and the little girls were doing the limbo, where you go under that...
Under the pole,
under
right?
the pole. And I said, no. And they said, why not? And I said, I can't. And they urged me, and I felt like I needed to participate. So I went and did the limbo and went under this broomstick and went home in tears because of doing something so sinful.
Okay, so you knew at age six that was not allowed.
That was not allowed.
That was breaking the rules.
Right.
Did you admit that to mom and dad?
I did. I was a great one for confessing.
That helps being an actor, I suppose.
Speaking of being an actor.
That's a convenient little, proclivity.
Exactly. And we didn't grow up with TV, so I remember...
So what did mom and dad say when you told them that you had committed limbo?
Well, it's okay to make others comfortable, and you made other people comfortable, so that was okay.
So tell us about Descent.
Well, Descent is that middle piece that really opens up and dives down into the darker contents. And I had a grandmother on my mother's side, who I never met, who overdosed. And that was a great family secret. And I did not know that growing up.
But overdosed on prescription drugs?
Prescription pills, mm-hmm. yeah.
And was it a purposeful overdose? Or was she committing suicide?
It was something no one ever said was actually a suicide. And she suffered for her silence. And that ended up being the easiest way, I suppose, to let go. And no one ever spoke about that in the family. So in that second piece, I explore something of the implosion of the women. And there's some madness on both sides of my family with the women. And I remember reading an article once about bipolar difficulties. And they said that the Mennonite community had an inordinate number of people, women particularly, who suffered from clinical depression and bipolar disorder. And I thought, how interesting. And I was fascinated to then look at that in terms of my own legacy.
Well, tell us about the third play, the At One play.
Well, an At One is also a tone. So to be at one with oneself is also to atone, to bring together all the elements of who you are. And I think the third piece is the kind of juicy return of self. And in that final piece, there's no real overt mention of the Mennonite roots. And it's really about a woman discovering the richness and the ripeness of being a woman and letting go of that wounded inner masculine that she's had to kind of hold back and be invisible. And I was talking to another Mennonite actress, believe it or not, and we were saying how it's so difficult to be an actress when you're raised with the notion that you should be invisible. And so she's very visible in that last piece and alive.
And I take it that you do a lot of exploration of sensuality and sexuality
yes.
in all three of these pieces.
Yes, and I'm a great believer that spirituality and sexuality are flip sides of the same coin. and that the more one is released into themselves, the more one is also released to express something greater than themselves and to receive and to radiate.
Now, each of these plays, if you just wander into the second one or the third one, do they all stand alone?
Yes, they do. And I am so excited about people seeing them in any order whatsoever, so that their experience of putting them together is uniquely their own. And I've had friends who have come to see workshops in different order and have been thrilled by knowing more about this girl's present than they do about the past, and then wanting to go back and see what that digging out is, and vice versa.
Just from a technical viewpoint as an actor, doing all three shows in one day, how do you do that?
Each of the pieces is about an hour and an hour 10 maybe. So they're not 2 hours each. So that's a good thing to know.
Yeah, well, good for you too.
Yeah, yes, good for me too. How do you do that? How do you sustain? I think there's a way in which if you're focused and at ease, and also understand that you're partnered with that audience, and to me it's miraculous, but they do energize me as much as I enliven them. And it's funny, I am a minister's daughter, and I in that sense feel that the theater is a sacred space, and that in many ways that congregation that I grew up with has just changed in terms of my relationship to it. But I think there's something magical and very sustaining